Welcome to Anchorage Edition, a weekly public affairs program produced by Alaska Public Telecommunications Incorporated in the studios of KAKM. The host and moderator for Anchorage Edition is Michael Carey.
Welcome. Our guests are Paul Jenkins of the Anchorage Daily Planet and Steve McDonald of Channel 2 News. Paul, the Senate race is not over yet. Reitan is in first place, and we're awaiting new developments. Please give us the lay of the land as of noon Friday when we are recording.
Well, you're absolutely right. Mr. and Ms. Reitan.
Senator-elect Reitan.
Senator-elect Reitan is out front with 40.95% of the vote so far. Joe Miller is at 34-34, where he has stayed pretty much since this count started. Mr. McAdams, 23-64, and he has conceded. So it's down to whether the write-in can beat Miller. That's where we are right now.
And Steve McDonald, it was a remarkable experience at Election Central on the next morning to pick up the election results, which are printed out, come out of the computer, and look at them and see various names, and then see write-in.
Write-in. Yeah, it was strange all night looking at the board and just, oh yeah, write-in, that could be a lot of people. But yeah, having write-in with, 38, 39, 40% as it grew throughout the evening and stuff. So yeah, the whole thing was very surreal in a lot of ways, as was the room you've been to.
Yeah.
A lot of election centrals over the years at the Egan Center and various hotels as well. And it was fun to see that whole west end of the wall all lined with national media. We've never really had that. Well, we've never have had it to that extent up here for a campaign. It's usually just ourselves, and no one really cares what goes on up here. But boy, you had CNN, and you had NBC,
ABC,
CBS. All of them were up here. It was great, and so that added a lot to the flavor of the evening.
And what can we expect of the count as it unfolds next week?
Well, I think there's still a number of question marks that are still out there. First of all, Lieutenant Governor Craig Campbell, who oversees, his primary duty is to oversee the elections here in the state of Alaska, he decided to move the vote count up by about 8 days, I think it's 7 or 8 days. That's not sitting well with the Miller camp. Miller camp says, we want to have people on the ground in place to monitor the vote count. We just want to make sure everything's on the up and up. And that certainly is their right to do that. They have every right to do that. So they just felt that by moving it up, it doesn't give them enough time to get their people up here and get their people in place. As of right now, it's set to go next Tuesday and Wednesday will be a massive vote count of absentee and question ballots.
I think there are about 36,000 of them.
Yeah.
Maybe more by
more,
now.
More right now. As of, again, this is Friday, so as of this morning, I think we were certainly over 40,000 at this particular point. So it's growing, and it will continue to grow as absentee ballots continue to come in from the lower 48, from overseas where soldiers are based. We'll see that amount grow. The absentee ballots had to be postmarked no later than Election Day, November 2nd, and they have until, I'm going to say the 18th, and I might be wrong on that, so don't hold me to it. But there's certainly a deadline that they have to be back here in the state of Alaska for them to be counted.
Okay, let's turn to the big question. How did Lisa Murkowski do it?
Boy, it's night and day compared to what happened in August. I don't feel that I'm going out on a limb by saying that she ran a horrible campaign in August. Just everything that could go wrong went wrong, including just what seemed like a lack of interest almost. I think everybody believed the polls that she was just going to womp anybody who was put out there, including Joe Miller. Some of those polls early on showed that she had a 20-point lead on that fella, and then there was some guy from Sitka, who even cares about that fella? We were just going to womp them, or she was just going to womp them in the general, so it was going to be an easy skate here. Obviously, that just didn't happen. There were a lot of things that they just miscalculated, and she winds up on the short end of the stick after the August primary. They learned their lessons. They learned their lessons well. They fired every bullet they had in that gun. They had about $1.5 million in the war chest. Why they would have that much money still in their treasury after the primaries beyond me, but they did. And it's a good thing that they did have that much because they needed every cent of that. And so they spent their money, they spent it well, they had a lot of good ads.
Well, they also had a lot of help from the Alaska Native community, business community, $1 million or more from the Alaska Natives alone,
right,
trying to influence their voters, presumably.
That's exactly right. And I think that was another thing, obviously, that was missing from the primary. I think no one took that race very seriously. And it's hard to get a good turnout in the primary. Joe
right.
Miller did a great job of energizing his base there. He had some added support with Proposition 2, which was the parental consent abortion issue that brought a lot of conservatives out to the polls. So he had a lot going for him. This time, it was Murkowski who energized her base.
Yeah, that's true.
It was the Alaska Native community that was energized to get out there and vote. And that's what you've seen here. But you've also seen, as we're looking through some of the numbers and through some of the precinct counts, she won places where she got dusted pretty good in August up in Fairbanks. She won quite a few precincts.
Yeah, one of the things I noted is Joe Miller did not carry an election district in Anchorage, or at least hadn't. Mm-hmm. There were a couple that were close. And also districts 36 through 40, which are western and rural Alaska, Joe Miller fell badly to Lisa Murkowski in those areas. She ran up something like an 8,500 vote lead on him in those few election districts, which are rural.
Yeah.
Let's get Paul in here. Paul, what happened to Joe Miller? You have to be the favorite, being the Republican, having the Republican line in November, and it didn't work at all.
Well, he's a Republican with a Republican nod. He wins the primary. He's got support from Sarah Palin. He's got tremendous outside support from the Tea Party Express. Lots of money. I think he didn't take her seriously enough, for starters. He's looking at this primary election campaign. Well, she didn't campaign. She's not very good at this, and on and on and on. And discounting the fact, of course, that Senator Stevens had just died, and she was busy working with his family. Discounting the fact that there was a parental notification issue on the ballot that drew his people out in that first election, the primary. This time around, you had the Native turnout was extreme because of the constitutional amendment on the ballot to expand the size of the legislature to ensure they all get adequate representation. That drew people out as well in rural Alaska, in some of these districts the size of California. And I think he walked around with fuses hanging out of every pocket, lighting them as he went.
You sure those weren't handcuffs?
Well, they could. Well, one of them was attached to handcuffs. We have handcuffed journalists. We have ducking questions, dodging reporters. If you were going to advise somebody, here's how you screw up a campaign, well, somebody was doing a good job for him because he did things and said things and that were stunning. And the kind of thing that the news media feeds on, that once that one thread gets loose, somebody's going to come in and pull them all.
I think it's pretty clear, given the vote in Anchorage, the fact that Miller couldn't win here suggests that the media coverage played an important role in that.
I think the media coverage was very slow in the primary. Primary, there was little to speak
absolutely.
Of. It turned on a dime, and the next thing you know, about the time that he stops answering questions, or no, you can't come to my house, or whatever he was saying, it started him up.
Quickly, Scott McAdams.
I'd like to think he has a bright future. I think he surprised everybody, just how eloquent he was, what a great campaigner he was. He had wonderful media. I think he had the best media of all the candidates. And I think he was just this very pleasant surprise. It would have been interesting to see if it was McAdams versus Murkowski or McAdams versus Miller. It would have been an interesting race if it was one-on-one. I think he was a victim of, I don't think he can win, so I'm going to vote for Murkowski because I don't know about Miller kind of thing. I think that happened an awful lot. But he was a very pleasant surprise. I thought he ran a good race, and he was a very strong
candidate.
We
better move on to some other things real quickly, and we're going to come back at some point in the future to this election because it was such a remarkable election and still is. Let's talk about the governor's race, Paul. For a while, it looked like Democrat Ethan Berkowitz was picking up a lot of ground. He didn't. He finished 20 points behind.
Well, at some point, a few weeks out, he was he closed to within 10 points.
Yep.
He finished up at 38 percent to Parnell's 58%. The governor kind of, he started talking about fixing Alaska's clear and equitable share oil tax. He started sounding more like a Republican. He kind of drifted slightly to the right. And I think there was an overall distrust among the Republicans that Berkowitz had to woo, that he would, as soon as elected, switch back to being a Democrat. And I think that probably played a large role in it, although he had a lot of good things to say.
Well, it would have been really hard for him to get to 50%. That's pretty clear.
That's true.
Steve, and the Parnell campaign focused on, drumroll, what?
President Obama. Or at least the Republican senatorial, the governor's conference, they added a lot of ads to the mix. And, you know, I knew it was Berkowitz versus Parnell, but I thought for a while there, Berkowitz and his running mate was a guy named Obama, because every spot
Diane
you saw.
Obama.
Yeah. I thought, wait, Diane Benson's the lieutenant governor. No, it's President Obama. They did a great job of marrying President Obama and Ethan Berkowitz together on this. So, and the president, not very popular up here in Alaska. And boy, they glued the two of them together. And I think that had a lot to do with it. It was a great campaign move. It was a great strategy.
In the end, it turned out to be a blowout. 20 points is profound. And it sort of raises obvious questions about Ethan Berkowitz's future. In the U.S. House race, Don Young won re-election again easily. Mm-hmm. The Democrats all did poorly. Yeah. Tell us about the U.S. House race.
Well, I think Don Young, I think he's been in that bulletproof phase for several election cycles now. He's just untouchable. He's Alaska's lone voice in the House of Representatives, and by all counts, people are very happy with the job that he has done. And I think, as the only guy there for Alaska, I think he has done a really good job. I mean, he does stuff once in a while. He shoots himself in the foot, but he seems to always overcome it. And I think that Democrats were hoping that at some particular point in time, there was going to be the Department of Justice with a subpoena or an indictment, and that was going to send him on his way. That didn't happen. The opposite happened. Department of Justice said, nah, nothing there. That's all there is to it. So no more Don Young problems there.
One thing I was going to note, Don Young will now be the fourth a longest-serving member of the House of Representatives. Only three members of the
That's
House
amazing.
Will have served longer than Congressman Young.
Yeah.
What does this mean for Harry Crawford? Does he have a future, or is this it?
I'm unsure. The campaign he ran, as we were discussing before the show, was pretty weak. He got his hat handed to him here. This may be it for him.
Yeah, you know, he's really an interesting guy. He has won that House. He beat Ramona Barnes, an icon, a legend, a Mrs. Republican. He beat her.
Although she was a damaged legend by the time he beat her.
She was fading. She was. You're right on that, Michael. But he did beat her in a heavily Republican precinct or district. And he continued to win in that district, which was overwhelmingly Republican. So he was doing a good job out there, and the people liked him, and he was able to take on all comers. And yeah, some of the elections were squeakers when it came down to question and absentee, but he did well. And in this one, I'm not really sure why he got into it, why he decided to go from the state house.
I think you said it earlier, lightning will strike.
Yeah, I think that's probably what they were thinking of. And I asked him election night, what's his future like? I'm not really sure, he says. He may try this again. I mean, one of the good things about running a race like this, you know, you get your name out there and you get some name recognition, but I don't know how much name recognition he got out there in the villages and up in Fairbanks and places like that. I'm not sure.
Okay, let's turn to the judicial retention battle. Paul, Chief Justice Dana Fabe is retained, but barely, or not barely,
that's
but
not
in
good.
A close
pretty
race.
Yeah.
Tell us about the judicial retention battle, generally speaking, and Justice Fabe.
Justice Fabe, I guess, garnered 53% of the vote to retain her, 46% to get rid of her. She played a role in the parental notification or parental consent, striking down the parental consent law in this state. Pro-abortion rights people have been, or anti-abortion rights people, have been very angry with her ever since. This was their chance to get it all kind of came together, They managed to stir their forces up and tried to turn her out at this point.
Do you think it would have been different if they'd had some money in like a month to go after her? It seemed to me that what happened to her, the negatives were all in the last two or three weeks.
Well, and it was. And the campaign, it seemed to me, against her only got headlines, only got news time the last couple of weeks. Mm-hmm. And if you look at them, 53-45 is not a lot. I think they could have.
It was much different than the other ones, which tended to be 55.
Lopsided, 60 to 34. Right,
Okay. Steve, is this a very satisfactory system we have for retaining judges? After all, the public doesn't really get to see these judges very often. We're, occasionally, people are in the courtroom with them.
Yeah.
The rest of the time, we're sort of relying on the voter's pamphlet, if that.
Well,
on the other hand, it might not be such a great system to have judges out there campaigning. I've seen that, and it's not a camp
not a
running
sight.
For election and raising money. It's not an inspiring sight.
No, it's not. I just don't think that that's a good way to go. I think this is the best system that I've ever heard about. You've got the Alaska Judicial Council, which is incorporated, which was formed by the Constitution of Alaska to go in and to analyze the performance of judges. They talk to people, defendants. They talk to the prosecutors, defense bar. Yeah, they talk to all the attorneys, all the people who have to come in contact with the judge, and so they get a pretty good idea of how these folks are operating. Now, and the thing that was really, voters are paying attention. Voters are really, really smart. And if you don't think they're paying attention, you just look at the two races, the Dana-Fabe race. Dana-Fabe was given glowing remarks by the Alaska Judicial Council. A number of her colleagues came to her assistance in compass pieces, news reports and things like that. People were paying attention. Yes, it was closer than all the other races, but she still was retained. Now, the Judge Postma, the Judicial Council came out and said, this fellow is not fit to remain on the bench, and here's why. And they laid out their case. And there were a couple of compass pieces in the ADN, one by Mr. Posta, who stated his case, and then there was another from the head of the Alaska Judicial Council, who stated their case, and voters paid attention to that. It's really easy to go down and go, oh my God, there are 30 names. I got to fill in all these ovals. I'm not doing that. Or to go down and hit all the no's. People were really conscious of what was being said in those races. And all the judges were retained who were recommended to be retained. They won. And the one who was recommended against was not retained. So
let's turn to the Alaska legislature, Steve. Republicans pick up a couple of seats in the House of Representatives, but the state Senate remains the same. Tell us about it.
Well, a 10-10 split in the Senate, which is how we went in. So it came out the same way with a 10-10 split. Republicans did very, very well in the House, however. They picked up a couple of more seats. So it was a 22-18 lead for Republicans going into Election Day. There were also a couple of Democrats, I think, that would cross over and vote with Republicans from time to time.
Eric Croft on KSK said it was possible for the first time that the minority would contain no Bush members, which would be very striking and a powerful development, if true.
So now it's, 24-16, I think, is the split right now. Mia Costello beat Bob Book in West Anchorage, and there's going to be a couple. I'm not going to remember. I'm sorry, but
Woody Salmon lost.
Yeah, that was a big one up in the Fairbanks area, right?
Well, it's a gigantic district that's everywhere.
It's like the size of Texas or whatever. Yeah, so maybe outside of Austin for all we know, but there were a number of upsets that helped.
Kelly lost in Fairbanks, an incumbent Republican.
Yeah.
And that's actually very unusual considering what kind of year it was for Republicans.
Right. And then there was another, there was Harry Crawford's seat went back to a Republican, being a Republican seat. So there was a win out there as well. So that was another seat that the Dems lost. So Republicans.
Let's go to Paul and the Senate report.
10-10, nothing's changed. I guess the primarily interesting race, Kathy Geisel versus Janet Reiser. Mm-hmm. Geisel pounded a lot of shoe leather trying to go door to door and won 7,500 to 6,000. Philip, I'm going to wreck this name, Dubizinski. I think you had Dubuczynski. 1,800 votes, so he might have made a difference. I'm not sure. Mm-hmm. But that was a hard-fought, long race, and it was interesting to watch. Mm-hmm.
And I've been informed by one of the members of the majority that they have organized, and we're going to see a list pretty soon of who got what. We know Senator Gary Stevens will retain his position as the president of the Senate, but there's a minority of, as I understand it, four Republicans. We'll have all the names eventually as it plays out. Question, and we're going to stick with you, Paul. Alaska is a red state, but how red? How red are we?
Well, it depends on, I think, the question you ask. If you ask on an economic basis, we're 70-80% red. If you're asking straight politics, we're probably 50-60% red. Hmm. I think what is happening in the state is that things, we were Democrat, what, 30 years ago? 30 years ago,
Democrat. Yeah, I was alive then.
Were you really? Did they have electricity then? That's what I want to know.
In some places, but not everywhere.
So it's a political whim. Things change. The tide shifts, the pendulum swings, all of that. And someday you could easily see this state becoming Democratic stronghold.
And everybody knows
but not the, anytime soon.
And no. Some of our viewers may not the
as old as
know
you?
The old joke about what do you call a Democrat with a $20 bill? A Republican? Does the Democratic Party have a future? I mean, it was a pretty grim evening for them.
Yeah, boy, does it have a future? Well, I think, like Paul says, that pendulum swings around. But one of the things, I see a real thin bench. I mean, Tony Knowles was the high watermark for a long time.
Yeah,
well, I guess Mark
true.
Begich is the high watermark. Forget about Mark. But Mark, I think, is going to be a marked man come 4 years from now when he runs for re-election. It's going to be a tough race, whether he can hold
we're
on
We're going to get to him with Paul, but go
okay,
ahead.
I'm
have
sorry,
your say.
No,
I should take no, good. Well, we'll talk about Begich.
Well, yeah, I just think he's their guy right now. But after that, you know, Ethan Berkowitz, now he's lost, what, three statewide races. He was lieutenant governor candidate with
right.
Tony Knowles and was beaten. He ran against Don Young and was beaten, and now Parnell and he's beaten. So you got to wonder.
Among other things, it gets hard to raise money when that happens.
It does, but then who's after him? I mean, there really aren't very. I mean, there aren't.
Well, you'd have to think
Democrats.
That Senator Wilikowski here in Anchorage.
Bill might be
he just
somebody.
Won re-election and. Mm-hmm. He certainly has a story that might resonate with voters.
Yeah, and there may be somebody on the Anchorage Assembly who's an up-and-comer. That may be a possibility as well. Lindsay Holmes is very popular in her district. She's a Democrat in West Anchorage. But these are folks who are still down there yet. They
Let's
need
go
to, get some
to,
recognition.
To Paul. Paul, what's the lesson here for Mark Begich?
Pray for a Tea Party opponent.
Well, another way you could put that would be choose your opponent.
Choose your opponent choose if you can, opponent. As Harry Reid would, yeah. He's going to have as Steve was pointing, he's going to have a tough row to hoe in a couple of years. He's got fairly significant negatives, I guess, at least there in Anchorage anyway. Mm-hmm. I think he needs to plow the fields here in the state and do what he can.
Actually, I do think, Paul, the model here is Reid in Nevada, who had terrible negatives, but was able to really, I mean, he had an opponent who he could exploit, and he also, as I understand it from people who seem to know, did a great job of on the ground of just turning out his people.
He did that, and he was out on the street every day shaking hands, talking to people. That you can't discount shoe leather equity in this thing. I really believe
Mark
that.
Mark Begich is a real good campaigner.
Yeah, that is one of his strengths.
And I think a lot of it also depends on how well President Obama bounces back from what happened Tuesday night.
Would anybody predict where America is going to be in 4 years or what people want? I mean, based on what we know.
Yeah. No, we don't know.
Quickly, Steve, the Alaskan voters turned down an opportunity to expand the legislature.
Yeah.
No surprise.
No, I don't think so. I think it's like, we want to make the government even bigger? No, I don't think we want to do that. So I think it was just one of those things where, again, there's some good people who were behind that, and I think their heart is in the right place, and they want to make sure that the villages and other places that are growing are adequately represented. I just think right now people are going to go, we don't want more of those guys. We want government to be smaller, so we don't want to expand it. So anything that says they're getting bigger is going to get a no vote.
Let's try something that's totally unscripted here. I didn't have my topic list. Paul, Was this campaign the most negative campaign ever, or are people only imagining that?
It's hard to judge because, unlike you, I was not back that long ago. So.
Oh, yeah.
But you were someplace else. You've seen negative campaigns.
This one is up in the top 10%, suppose.
Yeah.
But I doubt seriously that you could say it was the absolute worst. There was no blood. No bloodshed. No.
Here's my favorite. This is a mailer that came to my house.
Yeah.
Halloween, it's scary out there. What's your worst nightmare? In Alaska, there's one even worse. It's Joe Miller. And on the front of this mailer, it shows a crypt, a headstone. And on the headstone, it says Alaska economy died November 2nd, 2010. It has a hand coming out of the grave. And it has Joe Miller, who appears to have blood on his head and looks something like a zombie or a ghoul. I'm not sure I know the difference between a zombie and a ghoul, but there you are.
They seem to be the same, yeah.
Okay.
It always seems like it's the worst campaign when you're in the middle of it, right?
Exactly.
I mean, it just seems like this is the worst thing I've ever seen. But if you think back, the Knowles-Murkowski Senate race was no picnic either. There were a lot of things that were getting thrown at everybody, but... This was a tough one.
At least
this was
George
tough.
Washington's mother was a prostitute. I mean, we didn't sink to that level.
Yeah. I'll tell you one real quick. I know we have only seconds, but we had a debate, Channel 2, and I was sitting very close to the three Senate candidates, and I've never felt the kind of intensity that was around that table that night.
Well, the intensity is going to have to go out of the room because we're out of time here in Anchorage Edition. Thank you so much for joining us. See you soon. Good night.
If you have questions or comments about the program, you can email Anchorage Edition at anchorageedition@kakm.org or write us at 3877 University Drive, Anchorage, Alaska, 99508. Anchorage Edition is a production of KAKM. The opinions expressed are those of the hosts and guests and do not necessarily represent those of KSKA, KAKM, the licensee, or their underwriters.